when FBI agent Margot Bennett married a fellow FBI hotshot, the two seemed destined for a life of intrigue.
I had no doubt that we were going to have a great future. Certainly sparks were flying.
But before it was over, bullets would be flying too.
He had devised this crazy, crazy scheme.
This is not supposed to happen. We have two qualified FBI agents here, and they're going to war.
And after she emerged from a secret affair, Margot would discover that the most dangerous criminal she ever faced lived right under her very own roof.
I knew that he was going to come back. I knew I was going to die.
When it comes to love and marriage, things aren't always as they seem. Growing up in Athens, Georgia, Margot Bennett knew her career goal was to serve and keep the peace.
I became a police officer, and a friend of mine said, you know, you should try for the FBI. That's where I really found my niche, and it gave me the satisfaction of knowing I was doing something good.
In the winter of 1982, while 29-year-old Margot was finishing up her FBI field training in Atlanta, she met another new recruit, Jean Bennett.
My colleague said, hey, Margot, I want to introduce you to Jean Bennett. Stay away from him. He'll try to get in your pants.
He had this swagger, very confident. He was already doing undercover work, which was almost unheard of. So he was a boy wonder.
In a single night working undercover, Jean helped bring down dozens of criminals and recovered more than $8 million in smuggled goods. The FBI was impressed. And so was Margot.
It is not something that just anyone can do. He had really taken to the work, and he was very successful.
So Jean asked her out, and she initially tried to say no, and he was just very persistent.
Almost instantly, the sparks started flying. But soon, Margot was transferred to Kansas City. After 2 years of long-distance dating, she knew there was only one way the agency would bring them back together.
Jean and I broached the topic of marriage. I pretty much said to Jean, okay, now's the time. We're either going to do this or we're not. And so I guess you could say that I proposed to him.
In the winter of 1984, Margot and Jean tied the knot in a huge church wedding in Atlanta.
I had no doubt that Jean was the person I was meant to marry, that we were going to have a great future.
She was just really thrilled to be with Jean, and Jean was thrilled to be with her, and it looked like they were going to live happily ever after.
For the next 2 years, life flew by for the FBI's golden couple. But one day in September of 1986, while Margot was 8 months pregnant, Jean approached her with an idea for a scam.
He said he was just talking to his informant, and that his informant had this great idea, and it involved using the relocation service to make a profit on a house.
The FBI helps agents relocate by paying them the equity in their house and then selling the house for them.
The idea was that we would assume ownership of a home that the informant had recently purchased, as if we had lived there and used that house to sell in the relocation service.
Jean told Margot they would split the profits with the informant.
My response to it was that his informant was nuts, that it was crazy, that there's no way we would do that.
Jean let the idea go. A month later, Margot gave birth to a beautiful baby girl, and life seemed back on track.
Jean was a great dad. He was the first one to change her diapers. He doted on her.
But little did Margot know that this proud father would become her mortal enemy. 10 years down the road, Margot and Jean would face off in a scene straight out of a best-selling crime novel. It all started on June 23rd, 1996, with a late-night phone call.
My pastor came on the phone, and he said that he needed my help, that there were members of the congregation, a married couple, that were having a domestic dispute.
Around 11:30, Margot rushed to the church.
I pulled in, everything was dark, and got out and walked up to the front door. All of a sudden, the sanctuary door flew open, and this figure came out wearing a ski mask. He had a gun.
Margot had walked into a trap set by her very own husband.
And I knew right away it was Gene. I knew I was gonna die.
In October of 1986, 10 years before FBI agent Margot Bennett found herself caught in her husband's trap, she and Gene were preparing to move to Washington, D.C. with their baby daughter.
My job was to do background investigations on court appointees. Gene's job was to do background investigation on White House appointees. It was a prestigious position.
But just before the move, Gene brought up the home relocation scam again. This time, he would not back down.
I didn't want to do it, and Gene's response was, you know, don't let the door hit you on your way out.
To save her marriage, Margot went through with the scam, but it wasn't the payday Gene expected.
Gene had been hoping to make $100,000 on this house, but he ended up with only $17,000.
When the couple left for D.C. in January of 1987, Margot hoped it would end there.
I felt that once we moved, Gene would get on a different path than the one he was on.
That spring, Margot was offered her dream job, a teaching position at the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia. She was thrilled. But once again, her husband became involved in shady deals on the side.
One of the rings that Gene had given me was a gold coin that had diamonds around the face of it, and it was not comfortable while I was typing, so I took it off and I put it in my purse in a little pouch.
Oddly, when Margot looked for her ring a couple days later, it was gone.
When I went to tell Gene that I had lost the ring, I really thought he was going to be upset about it. But instead, he told me that our insurance would cover it.
Without blinking, Gene filed a claim and received a check for almost $12,000. The following Christmas, he surprised Margot with an identical ring, familiar scratch marks and all.
I was worried that this was the same ring that we had gotten an insurance payment on. I didn't know it for a fact, but my heart sunk.
By the time their second daughter was born in January of 1989, the distance between the couple had grown.
I was hoping that with this other child, our family would become more complete and that it would be a way of pulling us back into where we were.
But it wasn't meant to be.
He enjoyed the undercover work. He enjoyed pretending to be a criminal. He enjoyed that so much that it was starting to seep into his life.
By the summer of 1990, after 6 years of marriage, Margot had had enough. But she wasn't ready to break her family apart.
I was telling myself that when the girls graduate from high school, I'll do something about this. I'll wait 10 years. I'll wait, and I'll just be unhappy for 10 years.
Margot stayed in the marriage, but in June of 1991, her love life took a surprising turn. Crime novelist Patricia Cornwall had come to Quantico to research her new book.
When I was getting to know Patricia, I called her Patsy. We would get together for lunch. We would spend some time together, and she came to my house for dinner on a couple of occasions.
Soon, Margot sensed an attraction between them, and it wasn't long before their friendship became something more.
I began to sense a different kind of closeness from her. It was something that was missing in my life. You know, it's almost like I was a dry sponge, and she was throwing water on it.
By April of 1992, Margot and Patsy were getting closer and closer. But with her unfinished business at home, Margot couldn't go on with the affair.
we agreed we should stop this and just be friends. And that's what we did.
But the affair changed Margot's outlook on her marriage. And 2 months later, she told her husband she wanted a divorce and temporary custody of the girls.
Gene was stunned. I don't believe he thought I was heading in that direction. He told me he was okay with me moving into an apartment, but the kids weren't coming with me.
And at that point, she realized it's gonna be all-out war.
So Margot went to the FBI and told them all about Gene's house fraud scam. In March of 1993, Gene and two of his accomplices were arrested and charged with 2 counts of fraud.
I felt like a heaviness about me because I was going to be very involved in the case. I was going to be testifying against my children's father.
By June, Margot was prepared to take the stand. But 5 days before the trial, Gene had another plan in store for Margot.
He absolutely flipped.
She was isolated, hands and feet taped.
And I realized that I might not live through this.
On June 19th, 1993, 5 days before his trial for fraud, Margot Bennett's estranged husband, Gene, had the children for the weekend. He asked Margot to pick them up at 7 in the morning.
I pulled down in the driveway and got out of the car. The garage door came up and he was carrying their book bags. When he got close to me, he dropped the book bags.
That's when Margot realized she'd walked into a trap.
I saw that he had a taser in his hand. Through my head was going, get out, get out, get out, get out right now. And I took off running. He caught me and he pulled me back into the garage. He was wrestling to hold me down and I was fighting for my life.
Margot was quickly overcome.
Gene was using the taser on me, on my head. I gave up. I couldn't fight. I couldn't fight it any longer.
He gagged her and blindfolded her and stuck her into the trunk of her own car.
I was trying to figure out, how am I going to get out of this? I was praying to just find a way out.
After driving for nearly an hour, Gene opened the trunk and delivered a bombshell.
He said, here's the deal. They've got the girls.
Gene told Margot that their kids were being held hostage by his accomplices until she agreed to change her testimony.
He made her think that they were in this together, that they had to fight the kidnappers.
He said that if I could convince them that I could get on the stand and lie and be credible about it, that they were willing to let me do that. I told him I could do it.
Gene held Margot captive until it was time for her to testify 5 days later. On June 24th, Margot stunned prosecutors when she took the stand and reversed her testimony. When the judge called a recess, Margot phoned her good friend, John Hess.
There was a sense of almost panic in her voice, in which she just blurted out that she had been in the clutches of Gene. She was still concerned that maybe he had been telling her the truth about her children having been kidnapped. And I said, for heaven's sake, Margot, you know that's not true. He's lying. You have got to tell the truth.
Margot told her attorney what had happened and soon learned that her kids had been staying with Gene's babysitter the whole time.
I knew that I had been had. I had been totally broken down by someone that I once trusted. It was like, what else can there be?
A new trial was set, but this time Gene made a plea deal. He was sentenced to 1 year in prison and resigned from the FBI.
Gene was charged with and convicted of the fraud against the government. He also acknowledged improper contact with a witness, that But he was not, the idea of kidnapping was not brought up.
My response was, it sounds like my life really wasn't worth a whole lot to know he was getting a year. I ended up resigning and leaving. I used the time that Gene was gone to heal emotionally as much as I could.
In March of 1995, Gene was released, but Margot couldn't break free from him. They still shared joint custody of their girls, and Margot feared he wasn't finished with her yet.
After he got out, I got a job at police department. I never went anywhere without a can of pepper spray and my gun. Mentally, I was just keeping myself on alert. I knew that he was going to come back. I just knew it.
When their custody battle for the kids got underway, Gene snapped once again. On the night of June 23rd, 1996, Margot was summoned to her church by the pastor. She entered the church expecting a domestic dispute, but instead found herself with a gun to her head.
I knew right away it was Gene.
This time, she was ready for him. She had her pepper spray, she had her gun, and this time, she was on her game.
And so I dove into the pastor's office. I went around the corner of his desk. Gene kept trying to come in the room.
Margot reached into her purse for her gun, but as she looked up, she saw that Gene had raised the stakes.
Margot saw her minister in the next room with a bag over his head, handcuffed to his chair, and a bag of explosives around his waist. And Gene said, "Do you want to die? Do you want us all to die?"
I realized that he was not going to quit. He was not going to go away. And I told myself, I'm going to have to shoot. I'm going to have to shoot him to get us out of this. And the next time Gene popped his head around the corner, I fired.
On the night of June 23rd, 1996, Margot Bennett fired a bullet straight at her estranged husband, Gene.
I missed him. I missed him by just a fraction, but it was enough to let him know that I was willing to take that shot. He backed off. I was yelling at Gene to leave, just go. Things got really quiet.
Margot called 911 and police arrived within minutes. But Gene was gone.
When we went outside the church, they cut the fanny pack off of the pastor's waist, and ultimately we learned that it was Play-Doh.
And it didn't take long for officers to track Gene down.
He went home back to his house and independently called 911 to report that Margot was trying to kill him.
His home surrounded, Gene refused to come out, and he turned up the drama on his 911 call.
As part of this crazy elaborate scheme, he had come up with this idea that he had been an undercover for so long that his brain had split. His psyche had developed this new person named Evil Ed, who had come up with this crazy plan to kill Margot.
After a four-hour standoff, Gene finally surrendered. But even in custody, Gene wasn't done trying to destroy Margot. This time in the media, exposing the Patricia Cornwall affair.
He hated me because it was my fault. In his mind, it was my fault he went to prison. It was my fault he lost his career with the FBI. I was going to pay for that.
In January 1997, Gene went to trial, but his temporary insanity defense didn't hold up.
He was not insane. Insanity, from a legal standpoint, means you don't know right from wrong, or you're incapable of controlling your actions. And the jury didn't buy that.
Gene Bennett was found guilty of 9 charges, including abduction and attempted murder. Although the jury recommended 61 years behind bars, the judge sentenced him to only 23.
The judge felt because of Gene's military service and because of his stellar career in the FBI, that there was still some positive about him and that he deserved the opportunity to have another chance.
In the summer of 1997, Margot and Gene's divorce became final. Margot got full custody of the kids.
I was very relieved. The kids and I could pull our lives back together. We could make a future for ourselves, and we didn't have to worry about that anymore.
Today, 15 years later, Margot lives near her daughters in California and is enjoying life as a grandmother.
The events of my life certainly have shaped who I am today. They have made me realize that there's a core in me that won't crumble, that I am stronger than I think.
Margot hasn't spoken to Gene since his arrest, but knows the day will come when she will have to deal with him once more.
I am not going to waste precious time worrying about that. It means that I've given up, and I'm not going to give up. I'm not giving up.
Absolutely.